Okay, this is Tina Young interviewing Nell Bogosian at her home in her kitchen at 1525 Clark Avenue in Granite City. It is November 14th, 2001. This is tape one, side one. Okay, well, the very first question I've got is just a very general one. Where were you born? And what is your relationship with to Lincoln Place?
I was born at 901 Needham House Avenue, Granite City, Illinois. And I lived in Lincoln Place for 63 years before I had to move.
And could you, this is a very formula question, could you just state and spell your name for the record?
So my name is Nell, N-E-L-L-E. Last name is Bogosian, B-O-G-O-S-I-A-N.
Okay, thank you. How did you come to, your family come to live in Lincoln Place?
Well, my father came first in 1914. Came from Van, V-A-N, Armenia. And his parents could see that there was going to be war. So he came first in order to bring the rest of the family here, make way for them. But then in 1917, the United States entered the war. So of course he couldn't go back to bring them. He signed up as a volunteer to go back as like a freedom fighter, whatever you want to call him. But he couldn't get out of the country. So then came the Armenian Massacre, Turkish Massacre, April 15, 1915. And he lost contact of my mother. At the time he came, my brother was born and she was pregnant with another child. And so I think there was an epidemic of smallpox or scarlet fever, what it was during World War I. So a little baby got sick and she died. And my father didn't have contact with him for 12 years because of the war. You know, they were refugees walking from country to country wherever they could find freedom. And then somehow or other through the Armenian papers, English and Armenian papers that were going back and forth, people were looking for one another, families from the States and from there, from Armenia. Somehow he wrote in one of the, put my mother's name in and my brother's name in and the rest of the family's name in. And that's how they made contact, correspondence. And so then he had him come to Istanbul, Constantinople at the time, to wait for a visa. And they waited there for 2 years to get a visa to the United States. First, he brought my mother, my brother, and his eldest nephew, because he was a boy, he was the eldest. And then a year later, he brought them here in June 1925. And then in January 1925, and in January 1926, he brought his brother, his wife, and the other son, the younger son, to the States. And we all lived together. And at that time, Needham House was Pacific Avenue. We lived at 901 Pacific Avenue, all eight of us.
So did the grandfather, your father's father,
his mother got killed by the Turks, his father got killed by the Turks, his niece got killed by the Turks. It was a massacre. I think it was, some people say 1.5 million and some people say 2 million people were massacred, and you should hear their stories. The people that survived, how terrible it was. And the Turks to this day deny it. So all the Armenians want is for them to admit it and there will be peace. That's all. They just want to admit that, you know, the massacre occurred. It was the first massacre of the century, or genocide.
Did the United States, was this anything published or in regular newspapers?
They say it was published, and they were starving, of course, just like the other countries are now, the children were taking like pennies to school, like feed the starving Armenians. That's where that comes from. Not that they were starving, but that's to help them. But everyone admits it. I mean, you know, but except the Turks. They deny it. Not only the Armenians, they did it to the Macedonians, they did it to the Lebanese, they did it to the Syrians, the Greeks dislike them also. Because, you know, my generation heard it from, you know, our parents what went on.
First-hand accounts.
First-hand account. That's why I was born here.
How did your mother come to this country?
They came by boat, I guess like a banana boat. My father brought my, had my mother and my brother and her eldest nephew here. They came like on a banana boat or whatever you want to call it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the first time, and then when they were in Algiers, coming by boat, the boys went out to do something, the two boys, and my brother came back, he was very obedient, but my father's nephew was a little mischievous, you know, and the two boys stayed out, the boat was taken off, my mother had to get on the boat to leave, so she said she was crying and everything, so finally they sent a motorboat out after him to pick him up and bring him to the boat. And then when they got to New York City, it was the first time they saw a black person. they kept following. My father went to New York to pick him up. And they kept following. They didn't know what this black person was.
Well, I guess if you've, you know, never seen somebody who looks so very different.
Yeah.
I would imagine that would have been a...
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's the story on that. And then they went to school here, you know. Graduated from school, and then my brother went to the military, of course, World War II. But he didn't go, he didn't have to go, because he was an alien, you know. But, of course, all his buddies went, so when he was drafted, he went also. And then when he got, because he wasn't a citizen, he didn't have to go. So then when he got out of, after the war, they gave him his citizen, the government gave him his citizenship papers.
After the war.
After the war, yeah.
I guess that's the least they owed him, huh?
Right.
What is your earliest memories of Lincoln Place as a child?
My kindergarten days. I don't know how we all communicated because we learned to speak English at Miss Prather's school because our parents were immigrants and we spoke our native tongues in the house, when we got out on the street or the playground or kindergarten. I don't know how we communicated really because none of us could speak English. We had no problems when we went to school, no special ed or anything, and we all came out pretty good.
Speaking of Miss Prather, the community Prather, is it
Prather?
Prather.
I'll tell you
the community center was already built by then?
No. That was built, I believe, in 1924 or 25. See, everyone, all the men worked at American Steel, mm-hmm. Nesco, and General Steel, and Grand City Steel. So Commonwealth, General Steel was called Commonwealth at that time before they merged, built that building for the children and the people community. We had three bakeries there, oven brick bakeries that built, made the pita and the, you know, sourdough breads, and people from all over came to buy it on Sundays, and I think we had about four barber shops, people all over town, men that came to get their hair cut, and there were about 12 taverns, no fights, nothing, you know. It was nice that we had a beauty shop in town. Two of them. Three.
I noticed, just looking at old directories, that most of the businesses, well, all of them that I could list, were on Meeting House Pacific.
Right.
Is that true? Is that most of the business?
Yeah, that was all business area. And the Hungarians built Hungarian home on the 1800 spruce, and now the Mexicans have it. I think, well, the Hungarians moved out, or they passed. You know how everybody moves out. And I think they gave it to the Mexicans, for Mexican Honorary Society, for like a dollar, just legally. And they redid the whole building, and they have affairs there.
When you were a child, did you go much to the Baptist mission that was down the road?
Oh, if you didn't go to Sunday school, it was a sin. Miss Prather, she ran a Methodist Sunday school. If you didn't go to Sunday school, it was a sin. We'd go to Miss Prather's Sunday school 9 o'clock Sunday morning. It was then in the afternoon. If we didn't go to the movies, walk to the movies, we'd go to the Baptist mission there. Mm-hmm.
What did they try to teach you or instill in you in the Baptist?
It was just, religious stories and regular church. We all enjoyed it.
Now, I know from talking to a couple of other people, there was a shared church in the neighborhood. It was a Macedonian. And
oh, yes. That was St. Cyril Church. And the Armenians shared it with the Macedonians. It belonged to them. You know, we alternated. Uh-huh.
Do they have, what kind of role did that, a shared church, play in making the neighborhood seem one as far as, different ethnicities, different people?
The majority of the people were Catholic. Mm-hmm. The Mexicans and the Hungarians, Italians were Catholics. So they would go to St. Joe's Church. Uh-huh. We had no problems whatsoever.
Was the Mexican population, did they come in around the same time, or did they come later than?
Well, the Hungarians settled in Lincoln Place, and they used to call it Hungry Hollow because of the Hungarians, and it was down in the like little valley. And then when Miss Prather came into the community, she changed to Lincoln Place. I guess because of Abraham Lincoln Freedom, I don't know.
She initiated the name?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I did
not
realize.
When people called us hunkies, they were wrong because a hunky is a Hungarian. That's a nickname for a Hungarian. There were a lot of Mexicans in town, too. They were all nice people, no problems. We didn't have any fights or shoot-ups or whatever you want to call it. We all got along well. All our parents knew one another. We all knew how we were all related. And to this day, I'm friends with, a lot of them. Keep in touch with them. And the pool room was, Sims Place was the center of the town.
When did that open as a pool hall?
1928, my father opened it, and then my brother passed in January 88, and then I just closed the pool room because that was a big building. I couldn't stay there by myself, and I moved here.
How did the neighborhood change from when you were a kid to as an adult and being older? How did the neighborhood change?
Well, when the men came back from military, from the wars, and then they get married, they moved out. Little by little, it thinned out that way. But I wish we had it. Because you know where 1800 is on Maple Street and Spruce Street?
Relatively.
Okay. That was all nothing but fields. And had people built and added on, it would have been a wonderful neighborhood because it was very clean. Saturday mornings, everybody's washing their porch, washing the steps, brick steps and sidewalks, It was a wonderful neighborhood.
You mentioned washing the steps and whatnot. Is that a European kind of tradition to wash the stoops and whatnot?
Everything had to be clean. I don't know. And then on Saturday mornings, what we had to do, kids, we had to go to the clubhouse. We called it the clubhouse, not community center. We'd go to the clubhouse, and Miss Fraser would give us a rag and a broom and everything, and we had to clean the bathroom. We had to clean the whole building, you know. And then there was a big playground there, big playground. They had a big sandbox. We'd go, like, in the summertime, we had to go Bible school for 6 weeks. And then we received different merits. We memorized, like, the 23rd Psalm, the 100th Psalm, different things, you know. And then if you passed all these things, you got a crown, a star for each. I don't know how many it was. And then you get a Bible. And then after Sunday school, we had like arts and crafts. I was like 7 years old. They put a needle and a thread and a piece of cloth, and they'd fold it, and we'd learn how to hem, to do our handkerchiefs, you know, like a handkerchief hem. And what else they have? We made dresses. We assisted, of course, because we were too young. I was 9 years old when I started made a dress. I didn't cut it out or anything, but they taught us what to do, you know. And we were monitored. And we did embroidery work. And the boys did woodcraft. And then at the end of the season, at the end of our exit, we'd have a big exhibition. And everything would be on display, you know, embroidery, all the handwork and everything. And then we'd have like a program, and it was a big affair. And our parents would come and, you know, look at everything. It was huge.
Well, I guess it gives the kids something to do.
We were busy all summer. We had softball teams. Friday nights during the winter was girls' night on the basketball. We had softball. You name it, we had it.
Sounds like a well-organized small community.
Right.
Now, you went to school in Lincoln Place.
No, we went to Washington School.
Washington School?
Lincoln Place is in West Granite, but we never considered West Granite. They were West Granite. We were Lincoln Place. And there was always rivalry, you know, between the kids.
But the school was in West Granite then?
Yes, Washington School. It's down now, it's burned.
That's the little neighborhood that's right next to you.
Yes. It's on West 20th. It was on West 20th. It's an empty lot now.
Did they have public schools in Grant City proper that you went to?
Yes,
you know,
that
high
was
school?
That was it. It was all Grand City proper.
Well,
kindergarten there, because there was no other kindergarten in town. People didn't even know what a kindergarten was.
When you were in school, with, let's say, the other kids, mm-hmm. as you were older, did you feel different from them?
Because they made us feel, they called us foreigners. We weren't foreigners, we were born here, just like they were. Yes, and it took a long time. After the boys won the basketball team, because the team was off in Lincoln Place, all the athletes were from Lincoln Place, they kind of didn't look down upon us. You're talking about being shunned. The blacks don't know what it is. We were foreigners. Children, you know. I guess they learned it at home.
Most probably.
They usually call them Hoosiers. Kid stuff, you know. Then as we got older, we all loved one another.
Did that sense of, you know, feeling different or being picked on, did that make the community maybe stronger that way? Or because people together?
No, our parents, they all ignored it, you know. I'm just talking how children were.
Right.
You know, children could be cruel. You know, they made us feel terrible. You ask anyone, you talk to anyone other than me, you know, you'll hear the same story. We were really shunned.
But after...
Not by the teachers. We had wonderful teachers in Washington School. they knew our brothers because our, you know, older siblings.
Well, I found it, very political and very funny in a way that, you know, after the basketball team wins the championship, then they go ahead and they change the name of Pacific to Nedring House
to include it,
you know, it was way to say, you know.
I'll tell you what we did. We had brick streets, you know, red brick streets. Then the war came, World War II, and they started building the Army Depot, and they widened Pacific Avenue and renamed it Nedring House because it actually is Nedring House. You know, runs all the way to the hospital in Lincoln Place. Before, there was nothing but farm fields out there. And Nesco, they made enameling products, pots and pans and buckets. And we kids would get together and pack a little lunch from home and go junk, and we'd go out there. Like if they were enamel pans, if they were a little chipped, they would bring them back home. I don't know why we brought them home. And we would take a lunch and sit out there and play, and the guys would go, what they called it, the slough. They would go swimming there. It was fun. It was a wonderful neighborhood. I wish everybody had it. No one kept their doors locked. No one. It was very nice. I loved it.
Sounds like it.
And I got to know everybody from the pool room because, you know, everybody came there.
Were there any... I don't know how to say this. Because there was, you had quite a few different ethnic backgrounds living in that same neighborhood. Were there any? Did everybody basically get along, or was there ever any differences? Maybe due to cultural differences.
No. We were all good to one. Our parents were good, and we were good. You know, you didn't know. If she was Macedonian or he was Mexican, we were all friends. We exchanged foods, you know. Among one another, we learned it. We were very international at the time and didn't really know it. I knew what the Macedonians ate. I knew I ate the Mexicans. We all ate at one another's homes, you know. No, we didn't realize how well exposed we were to things at the time. Very naive.
Okay, let's see. Did people in the neighborhood growing up together and interrelating with one another, we were talking a little bit briefly on the break about intermarriages.
Were there
a lot of intermarriages? Did that ever,
no,
that was no problem there?
None whatsoever. Because they knew the families.
Right.
You know.
So did it make no difference at all, or was it more, I don't know, did they care less if a woman married someone outside the family, or if a man married someone outside the family?
Well, sure there were maybe some controversy between families, but I never heard of any. And they'd have big weddings at the Hungarian home, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, fabulous big weddings, you know, foreigners. And then when there'd be a funeral at the church, you know, at the St. What was the name? Holy Trinity, I think. No, I forgot the name of the real name of the Bulgarian church was there. At that time they used to bring the dead home, you know, viewed at home. And then they'd take them to church. And then Mr. Todorov had a band. He was a Bulgarian man. Terrific little band. He played Armenian music, Mexican music. We had two bands, a Mexican band, Mr. Santa Cruz. And then they would march. They would chop, put the hearse up at the top of the hill there by American Steel. And then to give all the kids the flowers, funeral flowers, and the band would play. And then we would march with the flowers and the... you know, the beer was behind, and the people, everybody marched up to the hill there, and gotten their cars, just like they do in New Orleans. You know, that's what we did.
Did that particular tradition?
Well, I just remember, you know, a couple of times we had a march. We talked about it sometimes with my friends.
When did that particular tradition come out of any particular ethnic group, or did just the whole neighborhood participate?
Well, the Armenians and the Macedonians and Bulgarians did it that way, but of course, the Hungarians went to St. Joe's, which was on this side of the tracks. You know, they're all Catholic. We didn't have a Catholic church in the neighborhood. We had Orthodox and the Baptist mission.
When did that, I guess that tradition would have stopped?
After all, they all started dying off. I don't remember. I guess they stopped probably when I was probably about 10, something like that. But as a child, you remember those little things.
Yes, I would imagine, because it's a whole, you know, large group of people.
Yes.
With a purpose.
But it was nice. Now when I think of it, it was nice, you know.
That would be a nice send-off.
Yes.
Did the neighborhood have activities or festivities outside of, let's say, Granite City as far as holidays?
Yes.
and whatnot?
Yes. The Mexicans had a fabulous fiesta every summer. It lasted for 3 days. They had the foods, they played bingo, and they had a dance band. Mr. Santa Cruz, Mexican. He had his orchestra, and they would play, and people would dance and make merry and fun, you know? And then the Armenians would have dances. But they were family affairs. The children came, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we learned to do our dance, folk dancing. The Macedonians would have a dance, and the Hungarians with all their chardashes, you know, polkas and all. And we'd go, like they'd have the Hungarian home.
You talked a little bit earlier about having school outside of the public school.
Yes.
What was the purpose of these like Armenian schools and?
Well, it was to teach us Armenian. You know, I mean, reading and writing. And Bulgarians had it at their church, and we had it at the Armenian building. We had Armenian school.
Was that ran like in the evenings then, or weekends?
Yes, in the evenings after school, you know, after school. Our teacher came from St. Louis on a streetcar.
Yeah, when St. Louis still had streetcars.
Oh yeah, I love the streetcars. We used to walk up to Binesco there. To catch the streetcar to go to St. Louis, and then if you want to go to Edwardsville or Alton or wherever, then you got off, or, you know. I loved the streetcar. It was nice.
So I'll move you a little bit later on, you know, outside of your childhood. Well, let's talk about your family life, your own family life, outside of your parents. I don't know, you know, were you ever married? Did you ever get married?
No, I never did marry.
Okay. I didn't ask a real simple question. You mentioned a brother. Do you have any other brothers or sisters? And
No one. They're all gone. Everyone's gone. I guess... the only Bogosian from that family, or eight of us, you know, living there. From the original family, after me, there were other, you know, after they married and had children, and now they're grandparents, you know, but I'm from the original. Right. And I know when the Pacific Avenue.
But you did have an older brother.
See, let me tell you. My father brought his brother, his wife, and two boys here, okay? And we all lived together, eight of us upstairs there at 901. My father didn't let his brother ever go to work, because he lived, my mother lived, when she got married, You divorce her. The woman divorces her family and she lives with a male family, right? So she was with them all the time. And she took care of them, the boys and all that. And we all lived together. And then the two of them married and went off, you know. And they had children. And their children had children have children now. So even like we're on the third, fourth generation now. Wait, one, two, three,
four. Do any of these younger kids in the family, have they been taught Armenian language?
Oh, they know words and here and there. And then my little nieces, I did a lot of babysitting. They're darling. I have all those pictures there. But anyway, so I did a lot of babysitting for my nieces and nephews. A lot. But after I retired, you know, I went on the early out. I said, gee whiz. So I went out. The first year I was free. Then the babies started coming. Then, of course, they don't trust anyone. So I was a volunteer babysitter for about 10 years. From babyhood, then I had to take them to preschool and then kindergarten, now they're all in school, see? So then after that, I start volunteering at church.
And that would be St. Gregory's bypass coming in.
So, and then we're all friends, you know, we all grew up together. But and then of course people have moved out of Grand City, like I said, the Armenians, a lot of them have come from like West County, Belleville. Couple from Collinsville.
So when you sold your business and decided to move out, why did you move out of the neighborhood?
Well, so when I was working, my mother became ill, okay, and we didn't want to put her in nursing home, so I quit my job. And I opened a little boutique downstairs. Well, the building was ours, right? And I did very well there. And people from all over came to buy in town. And their friends from out of town, you word of mouth. And then when my mother passed away, I said, well, gee, I mean, I didn't want that responsibility anymore, you know? So then I went to work for the government for my last. Because if you put in 5 years, then you can retire at 62, you know. So I went to the government, put in my time.
What kind of job was that? Where was that at?
Where they shipped me to. I started out at the depot, and then the IRS drafted me. And I had to go work for the IRS. That was at the federal building downtown. And I didn't like it, because if I drove, it was like $8 all day for parking, you know? So then I put in a lateral transfer, and I stayed there for a year. I put a lateral transfer, and I went to Goodfellow, which from Lincoln Place, it was only like 15 minutes, and if it was, and no parking, and, you know, I had free parking. So then I left, that's where I left work.
What was your very first job?
My very first job. Oh, I didn't go to work when I graduated. I would get up in the morning, clean the pool room, you know, do my work there, and by noon I was free. And then I had friends that didn't work. You know, you're young. I didn't want to go to school, and we all would bum in the afternoon. And then after a couple of years, I thought I better go to work. So I did. I went to General Steel. I was working there in the office in the clerical work. And then when the boys were, men were coming back from military, you know, see, they bumped people to get jobs. So I was out of a job again. So I said, well, I think I'll go to school. I went to secretarial school.
Where at? What?
In St. Louis, downtown. It's called Brown's something now. They moved here now. There's, you know, they have satellites, I guess, in St. Winston here.
Was it like Sanford Brown? Or?
Yeah. And Sanford and Brown were separate at that time. Sanford was a little farther out, and Brown was right downtown. So I went to Brown and did secretarial
work. Who did you work for once you...
What?
Who did you work for when
I don't even remember. I went to a legal firm downtown. I don't remember their name. And then my two friends, they wanted to take a vacation. I think we were about 19, something like that. They wanted to go to Canada. The one girl had relatives up there. So I couldn't get off, so I quit. I hadn't been working there before. And I quit. And the three of us hopped the train. We had a train station in town at the time. We went to Chicago. From Chicago, we went to, I think it was, where was it? Windsor. Not Windsor. What's the other big town there? I can't think of it. We went there. Just messed around, you know.
For how long?
We were gone a couple, 3 weeks. And then we came home. We just went in our jeans and t-shirts, you know. Like buns.
Bohemian traveling.
Yeah. You know what was cute? We were at the train station in Detroit to interchange trains, you know. And there was an elderly woman, and she looked so bewildered there, you know, and she had a babushka on. And I felt so sorry for her. I kept thinking about our parents, you know. So I went and spoke English to her, asked if I could help her. And she didn't know English. She showed me her paper with the name and a telephone number to call. And it was an Armenian name. So I said to her, I spoke to her in Armenian, you know, I said, I'm Armenian also. And she says, oh, she says, it sounds funny in English. Oh, she says, like the sky opened up and you came to rescue me, you know. So I told her we were interchanging. And so she gave me a nickel and I didn't take it to make a phone call. Her daughter was going to come. So I called her daughter and say, you know, I'm so-and-so and I met your mother at the train station, blah, 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 blah. And she's here waiting for you. And then she started me on. Now I saw it wasn't all that baloney, you know. But we had to catch a train. So I told the lady, I said, you sit right here. I told Norma, you sit right here. I told the daughter where I would place her mother, you know. And you be sure to come here and pick her up. And I told her, don't move, because this is where your daughter's going to pick you up. And the three of us just laughed about it. To this day, we laugh about it.
Well, very fortunate that woman ran into you, and vice versa, or that you showed interest. I mean, that's...
Oh, of course.
You know.
That was cute.
Sounds like you had a lot of freedom when you were, young, to just pick up and go and do what you wanted.
Our parents knew my friend's parents. You know, they were all friends. And the brothers were they all come to the room. You know, we were like one big family there. There was no introduction as, this is my cousin, you know, or this is my godmother. We knew everything about one another. Mm-hmm. It's cute. It's still not like eating from someone's kitchen table.
Yeah,
you know, when you eat out, it's different.
Good grief. Well, we were talking about food on our little break here. Describe to me, what do you think is a typical Armenian dish? What do you...
You mean what a favorite dish is?
Sure.
Favorite dish is shish kebab, of course, with lamb. We were eating shish kebab before it became so nationalized. And pita bread, salad, and pilaf, rice or cracked wheat pilaf. And that's, or chicken with pilaf and salad. That's a meal. And then yogurt, always yogurt. We grew up on yogurt. We made, you didn't buy it in the stores, we made it at home. And homemade yogurt's completely different than a commercial.
I found that out recently.
Yeah, completely different.
Now, the neighborhood had its own grocery stores.
Oh, we had, let me see. Kirchhoff, Martin's, Chris, and we had four grocery stores. All in the eating house now.
Did they offer...
We had cleaners.
Did these grocery stores offer certain products that you couldn't buy at, say, a regular or a different grocery store? Did they have specific...
Yes, they had the feta cheese. They had the Kalamata olives. They had foods that we like, you know. And you couldn't... Well, who ever heard of these, like the Kalamatas or the fetas, you know, at that time, other than our people?
Right.
You know.
The
world was small until after World War II. They were exposed to everything, pizza, you know, everything they were exposed to. Yeah, it was a smaller world.
When they started that, when they built that Army Depot down the road, how did that change the neighborhood, if at all?
It was busy. It was busy. There were a lot of military, you know, they had a lot of military stationed there. Excuse me. And they would, of course, go to the barber shops or here and there, or the bars there. And they had MPs, military police, you know, patrol the streets. They were no problem. People were nice to them because they themselves had, you know, men and boys in service. They were respected.
Did it financially help out the neighborhood to have all this extra business then?
Oh, I imagine it did. Some
would imagine.
And then Lincoln Place, then Niedringhausen Avenue, when it became, was very busy at, you know, certain hours, like work hours, in the morning and evening, very busy. That's when everybody started coming to Lincoln Place, too. You know. We were, you know, hoodlums, according to them.
When you were small, did a lot of women work outside of the home, or did
yes,
women...
during the war they did. They went to work in the plants, you know, the women did. They went to work. They had to. They did that all over the country.
Right. Okay. Now, when your parents came over, were they able to actually bring much with them, or did they, just
no,
what they could carry, or
just what they could carry?
And did they? Let's see how I'm gonna put this. How did they? Other than, like, say, with the neighborhood and the Armenian school, and you know, just living in a neighborhood that reinforces your own cultural ethnic mm-hmm. identity, what was there anything in particular that your parents tried to pass on to you about your heritage and where you came from? Was there
no? They just maybe told different stories about the genocide. You know, what they went through, it was very tragic times, just like the people are today. But the world wasn't aware of it or accepted it like today, you know.
Right.
To help one another. No, it was just ignored. You run the tape?
Yes, I'm going to end this side of the tape.